Whether it's a concert or a big game.
Wilkinson! New Zealand 1, Norway 0.
And the All Blacks are the world champions for the second time.
You can't beat moments like that in a stadium, right? But when it comes to the best configuration for hosting a city's big events, there's always a fight.
Eden Park is reportedly about to win the Battle of the Auckland Stadiums. A working committee will make a recommendation to Auckland Council on whether to invest in Eden Park or one of the rival waterfront stadium bids.
Whether it will be a revamping Eden Park or building a new stadium at the waterfront, the challenge will be to do so with little to no ratepayer money.
Some Aucklanders say they like the idea of a big new stadium in the central city.
I think a central city stadium would be fantastic and good for the city.
Kia ora, I'm Tom Kitchen, and today on The Detail, a debate that's been simmering for decades and has risen again with yet another proposal for a waterfront stadium in Auckland. But it's not just Auckland. Nationwide, there's argument about getting the right venues in the right place for the right price. Firstly, the debate raging in our biggest city. We start with Brian Finn, an expert on Auckland stadia. He's a public affairs consultant who used to be head of communications for New Zealand Rugby.
I've also worked as an advisor to parts of Auckland Council around their stadium strategy. So I've sort of been in and around sport and stadium matters for a good 30 years roughly now. It's a passion that also happens to be part of my job.
In Auckland itself, our biggest city, there are four stadiums, right? So Eden Park, Mount Smart, Western Springs, North Harbour. Have I got that right?
Correct, yes.
How did we get to have four stadiums, or what's the purpose of each one?
How long have you got? It's really a legacy of the old territorial local authorities that used to govern Auckland prior to the creation of the super city. And so in the years past, each council in its own area, so think of Waitakere Council, North Shore City, Manukau City, all of those areas had their own facilities, community facilities, and some of them included stadia, and they developed these along their own lines to service local needs effectively. Two outliers, one is Mount Smart, which came under the ownership of the Auckland Regional Council, which also predated the Super City, and Eden Park, which is privately owned, essentially owned by Auckland Cricket and Auckland Rugby, and is privately owned and run, unlike the other three facilities, which now are all owned by Auckland Council and operated by Tātaki Auckland Unlimited.
So Eden Park is often referred to as the national stadium. So that is the home of rugby, home of cricket, would you say, in New Zealand?
No. I'd probably take an alternative view. Two reasons. One, the only people who have called it the National Stadium are the Eden Park Trust Board. So we need to keep that in mind. And in fact, when various initiatives came up to develop new stadia, the sporting codes were adamant that you didn't get to call something a national stadium just because it was in Auckland. Having said that, it is definitely the home of rugby when you think that Auckland Rugby, the Blues, and also the All Blacks play out of there, and we've hosted Rugby World Cups there. Cricket really don't regard Eden Park as a home. Even Auckland Cricket have expressed their desire to leave, and New Zealand Cricket play very few fixtures there compared to how many fixtures they play in other parts of the country. And there's been no test cricket.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. There's no test cricket venue in our biggest city. I mean, you might have one days there in T20s, but nothing more really.
That's correct. Limited over cricket still plays at Eden Park. And as everybody knows, it's got real limitations, being a hybrid stadium that doesn't really meet the full needs of either a rectangular code, football code, or cricket, because it's not an oval. So one of the initiatives that came out of the stadium strategy we were exploring back in the sort of 2015 to 2018 period was to redevelop Western Springs as a cricket ground, because it's already a natural oval and it reflects those qualities that both New Zealand cricket and the New Zealand teams and fans have really shown a liking to, and that is that sort of village green atmosphere.
What happened to that idea?
A couple of different things. One was there was no funding to develop that at that time, even though New Zealand cricket had expressed a very strong interest in it. Two, the current tenants of Western Springs were Speedway, and there was a real tension around Speedway not wanting to look at alternative options away from Western Springs, even though council had offered to relocate them.
Mount Smart as well. So can we just go over Mount Smart itself is... Sure. Known as the home of rugby league.
Primarily, that's the home of the Warriors, and who are obviously in the middle of a great tier last season and this season, and really connecting with their fans in a major way.
Up the Wars!
Up the Wars!
Up the Wars!
You'd probably argue that everybody's loving Mount Smart right at the minute. Fans are enjoying the experience there. The Warriors are putting on great events there in terms of around their match day experience. They're based there, they train there, they've got their offices there. It sort of really works. It really is a multi-use venue, but you'd associate it primarily with the Warriors and with concerts that have been hosted there for many years, including, you know, record-breaking runs by Ed Sheeran and Adele, who both did three nights there each.
And just back to North Harbour, it hasn't had a hell of a lot of big sporting or music events for quite some time. So the council has a proposal out to, well, what is their proposal? There's a bit of misinformation about it. Some people say they want to bowl it and start again.
As I understand it, they want to reduce the footprint of the main stadium. And effectively, that means the main stand, and turn that into a boutique stadium, but maximise the use of the precinct around it for community sport and other uses. Some people on the North Shore feel that that's a loss of status and a loss of amenity to lose part of that stadium.
We need to keep the pressure on Auckland Council to make sure that they keep the stadium as it is and put it under new management.
Personally, I think it's probably the right way to go in that it's not being used for major events any longer. And that's not a product of mismanagement, as some people have claimed. I don't believe. I think it's just a reality that people don't want to travel to the north edge of the city if they're from across the bridge. And the other thing is that stadium is not as well geared up to host big events as the likes of Mount Smart, Eden Park and Western Springs. And that's because it was never built to accommodate very large crowds. It's got something like 7 or 8 sporting fields that have got floodlights. They've got mixed-toe turf, which means that they can be played on in all weathers. And that's really rare. In a city the size of Auckland, you need lots of sports fields to sustain community sport on Saturdays, Sundays, training during the week, school events, and North Harbour provides that. So I think losing those would be a far bigger impact, I think, on the North Shore community than would losing part of the main stand, for example.
Okay, so these are all our current stadiums that we have, right, and where they're at now. As we know, there's all these other proposals to put a stadium in the middle of the city centre, right, or somewhere around the city centre. What are the proposals there?
But I understand there's 4 proposals that were, if you like, made the shortlist for this working group of Auckland Council that was looking at alternatives for future development.
Auckland Council will be voting for 1 of the 4 proposals at the end of May.
One of those is repurposing Eden Park or redeveloping Eden Park. And then there are 3 in the central city, one on Tank Farm, one on the Wharves area of Port of Auckland, and one behind Spark Arena, which is called Te Tongaroa, which is on Ngāti Whātua and Railway Land.
A stadium opening out to Rangitoto at the heart of a 15-hectare urban redevelopment, complete with an All Blacks-branded hotel, apartments and dining options.
Full disclosure, I don't work for that group, but I've had a connection to them going back a few years, and I actually think it's a really compelling vision. For a couple of reasons. One, it's not the waterfront, and 2, it makes use of a part of town that's currently underused and not fully developed.
Well, what about that, you know, the sunken stadium that's called the Crater, you know, with a floating roof above sea level? Does that take your fancy?
The proposal that we've developed is one which would see the central section of the Auckland waterfront redeveloped, anchored by a new 50,000-seat fully enclosed all-weather stadium, which is sunken down into the seabed.
For some reason, people have latched on to this idea that we need a waterfront stadium. And I suspect, you know, the example that comes up most often is the Sydney Opera House. We need some sort of landmark venue like the Opera House for Auckland. I'd argue that a stadium is not that. It's got to be a functional stadium. You know, some of the ones around the world, and I'm a stadium junkie, so you know, I tend to like most of the venues that I visit. Some of them look spectacular, but some of them don't look like much at all, but they work very, very well. Dunedin's a really good example of a really functional stadium that gets the job done. It's got a roof and it's very functional, you'd argue. It's probably not pretty, but it does a great job. And that's what Auckland needs. I think it also plays into the fact that we're just not very good at New Zealand infrastructure. And I think that's well documented now by the Infrastructure Commission and others. We just don't plan for the long term. And what happens in the stadium world is we tend to wait until we've got an event coming up, and that forces us to act to create a new venue or upgrade the facilities that we've got. And we saw that a little bit around the FIFA Women's World Cup, to a much greater degree around the Men's Rugby World Cup in 2011, where there was a well-publicised shootout between a potential waterfront stadium promoted by the then government and a redeveloped Eden Park. In the meantime, Dunedin got on and built a new stadium, new covered stadium, and got it ready in time for World Cup with very little help from outside. So though that tends to be the way things get done, rather than saying, what do we need for the next 30 years? What are all the current and future needs that we need to cater for? And how do we make sure our facilities are future-proof for that? And let's get on and build them now when we don't have the time pressure of a Rugby World Cup or a Football World Cup or a Cricket World Cup, you know, steaming into view.
Well, I think what might turn people off about actually doing anything is that the cost associated with it and who's going to pay for it. I mean, wouldn't a redeveloped Eden Park be a bit of a more affordable option for Auckland ratepayers and, you know, just in general than developing a brand new fancy looking stadium and by Spark Arena in the middle of town?
My argument to that is twofold. One, it doesn't matter what we do. In the case of Auckland, Auckland City and Auckland ratepayers will pay hundreds of millions of dollars for stadia in the next 20 years. That's a given. Just to maintain the facilities they have there now will cost hundreds of millions of dollars. All of them need funding to just to maintain the status quo. So my argument is it better to put money into just keeping the facilities we have alive for another 10 or 20 years, or do we bite the bullet and say, let's make an investment in the future and create purpose-built facilities that are in the right location, that are going to meet all of the fans' needs, they're going to create economic opportunity in terms of attracting new events, and are also going to drive traffic into the right parts of the city. The other part of my argument is you can't put a roof on Eden Park and build two new stands and do it much cheaper, if cheaper at all, than building a new stadium. The structural work is so significant.
Significant cost or not, Eden Park is rumoured to be the hot favourite for redevelopment. We'll know for sure at the end of the month. But Auckland's situation has a parallel from the other end of the country, Dunedin.
At the moment, the events are really tracking along very similarly. The Dunedin Stadium started with a proposal to upgrade the old stadium at Carisbrook.
Rob Hamlin is a marketing lecturer at the University of Otago. He's taught feasibility analysis for the uni's Master of Entrepreneurship and has been vocal about stadia for years. Rob points out that 13 years ago, a working group was formed to look at upgrading Carisbrook, with figures of $50 to $60 million bandied about.
And then all of a sudden, this suggestion came more or less out of left field that we should build a new stadium up in the other end of town near the university. And this came really as a bit of a surprise. I mean, most people didn't really take it seriously until it became pretty obvious that those who were pushing the project took it very seriously indeed. And there was then a good deal of conflict within the city between those who wished to get the stadium built and those who felt that it really wasn't a good use of ratepayers' money, particularly ratepayers' money that the city didn't have. Nearly all of the money was borrowed. The stadium started off with the claim that it would be entirely privately funded, and it was pretty easy to demonstrate that no stadium of the type that was proposed was remotely capable of making the kind of return that was going to attract any significant private capital whatsoever to the construction. But nevertheless, that line was pursued right through to the end. The final outcome was that whereas initially we were promised that it would be entirely privately funded, at the end of the day, virtually none of it was. A lot of the private funding was actually revenue, that is, ticket sales and sponsorship deals and things like that, which couldn't really be considered to be capital contributions to the construction of the stadium. So basically the ratepayer ended up with as near to 100% of the cost. There were a couple of million dollars for sponsorship fees. I think there were virtually no donations eventually. It might have been a few hundred thousand dollars, something like that. But it was certainly a very, very small percentage of the total build, which eventually, with all of the road modifications and the extras that had to be paid for, came to the thick end of a quarter of $1 billion.
But do you think Dunedin's got something good out of it?
No. What Dunedin got was a roofed rugby stadium. And the problem is that because the stadium was built exclusively really to meet the needs of professional rugby, which wasn't actually in any position to generate any net revenue at all, it was heavily compromised for every other purpose.
A lot of people are really supportive of the Dunedin Stadium and say it's been a great asset to the city.
Well, that depends upon what you look at the outcomes of it. I mean, we were basically told that this thing would pay its way. It's done no such thing. When you're looking at the amount of money we're talking about, we're looking at a quarter of $1 billion, essentially to support primarily one professional rugby team. It is not in any way a good use for public money. The other problem with the project is that it's rendered the city council financially incontinent. There were a number of things done in order to stretch the elastic, which have proved to be subsequently excessively fiscally damaging to the city. I don't think that you really have, when you're looking at a structure which is supporting a discretionary activity, namely watching sport, generally by the well-to-do, because it's not cheap to do that, being funded by a number of people who have no interest in doing that, not a great deal of capacity to pay for it anyway. This isn't good. I mean, to put this in perspective, as a ratepayer in Dunedin, by the time 25 years rolls around, which was when the debt was supposed to be paid off, the capital cost of the stadium plus the interest plus the cost of maintaining it will have cost me, as an individual, fairly normal ratepayer, in excess of $10,000. And I personally, having no interest in rugby, have a better use for $10,000 of my money than building a professional rugby stadium for the Otago Highlanders.
Yeah, but can I just say, Rob, and I mean, some people are very supportive of rugby and they want to go to a rugby game. And the amount of, you know, good events that this stadium has brought to Dunedin, I mean, you've had concert after concert, especially in years past. You've also had, you know, the 2011 Rugby World Cup. Surely it brings some benefit into the city?
I don't think so, because one of the ways that these things are justified is economic impact analysis. So there have been a number of economic impact analyses done on the stadium. The problem is that they're only half an analysis, because the city managers will promote the stadium on its economic impact, which is related to its revenue. But the economic impact on this city, which is related to the cost of this structure, exceeds the economic impact of the revenue considerably. You also have to consider the economic impact of the revenue, once again, generally flows to the well-to-do, to the people who own the motels, who own the restaurants, who own the hospitality operations. But the expense, the negative economic impact, flows to the population at large. It's also worth noting that up until the professional era in rugby, up until when they started paying their players, rugby was able to pay for its own stadiums, and did, and it built some very big ones and maintained them too. But for some strange reason, the moment that this sport became a business, it also became incapable of paying its own bills in terms of supporting its own venues.
Okay, so Rob's not a rugby fan, and he is a firm believer that professional sport should pay its own way.
Yeah, this is once again where you're saying we don't need a stadium. We need drains and we need roads and we need clean water, all of which in this country have been very heavily compromised over the last 25 years. We do not need large facilities for discretionary leisure activities.
But I guess you're not a fan of rugby, are you?
I'm not a fan of what's called pseudo-Corinthian sport. That is sport which purports to be a commercial operation when in fact it relies on a large-scale extraction of taxpayer money in order to support its operations.
What would be your alternative, Rob? I mean, if the stadium wasn't built, what would you have liked to have seen?
Had the stadium not been built, then rugby would have stayed at Carisbrook. But at the end of the day, you know, Carisbrook was a perfectly satisfactory arena. Obviously, it may not have had the bath of warm ass's milk that, you know, modern athletes require, but it was a perfectly functional rugby pitch. And if that was all that the Otago Rugby Football Union and the Highlanders could pay for out of their own commercial and non-commercial income, then that's the venue that they had.
What about a venue for concerts and a big arena concerts and the like? I mean, isn't it good that Dunedin holds these events?
It's good for some people, but it's bad news for a lot more than that. It's a case of which is going to give you the more good. Should Mrs. Wiggins be able to have her dinner and sit in a house which is above freezing? Or should someone have the right to go to a Pink concert? Is that trade-off? I personally believe that Mrs. Wiggins should be able to heat her house and have her tea. Other people may believe that the rights of the Pink concert goer trump those of Mrs. Wiggins and she should die of hypothermia. I personally don't subscribe to that view. If you live in Dunedin and you want to go and see a Pink concert, you either buy yourself a DVD or you go to a centre which is big enough to support that kind of a venue. But once again, I do not believe that your desire to watch Pink live trumps the right of Mrs. Wiggins to stay alive.
Would you say that Christchurch is a size city that can maintain that kind of stadium that you were talking about?
Certainly. I mean, one of the most fortunate things that happened to the Forsyth Bar Stadium was the moment that it was completed, every alternative venue in Christchurch was flattened by the earthquake. I think it's very unlikely that even had the existing facilities in Christchurch been available, they would have attracted any of these big concerts down to Dunedin, because Christchurch has the audience and the infrastructure and the hotel rooms and the international airport, which this city doesn't have, remember. I mean, I've been told that essentially moving a concert down to Dunedin is a major scale pain in the arse, and if they can avoid it, they will.
Yeah, well, yeah, to that one in Christchurch, do you think that it's worth building the stadium there? Are they going about the right way in funding it, or is it a repeat of Dunedin?
No, for exactly the same reason that I believe that the right of Mrs. Wiggins' equivalent in Christchurch to stay warm and stay fed trumps the right of people who have the discretionary income in Christchurch who want to watch a live concert. If they want to watch a live concert, then this should be something which that industry can support out of their own money.
And in spite of the easy money being on an Eden Park refurbishment in Auckland, Rob reckons our civic leaders will pull a surprise out of the hat and suggest a new stadium be built in the middle of Auckland.
And I would assume, because they're already beginning to ramp this up, it will be said that if the city support this, private money will build the facility. Well, there's no chance that private money is going to build that facility. I mean, you can put that over your mind right away. If you build this stadium, let's say by some miracle it comes in on budget and on time, which it won't, but let's say that it does, you're going to have to generate, after all of your expenses have been paid, $160 million a year to justify the use of that private capital in that building. That's $3 million a week. That works out more or less that if you were going to say that private money was going to build that stadium, that you'd need an Ed Sheeran concert fully booked in that concert every working day for 25 years. It's not ever going to happen. Forget about it.
That's it for today. The Detail is funded through RNZ and NZ On Air. This episode was engineered by Phil Bench and produced by Alexia Russell. Thanks to Brian Finn and Rob Hamlin. I'm Tom Kitchen. Ka kite anō.